From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Even though the summer boating season is young, there have already been several tragic accidents on Iowa's waters. This hour, we ask whether the state's boating regulations are strict enough to keep unsafe boaters off the water. My guests include Susan Stocker of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, John Kaftel of the Army Corps of Engineers, and State Senator David Johnson. Have you been involved in a boating accident or a near miss? Tell us your story. Boating and safety on Iowa's waterways after this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. On Memorial Day weekend, we were reminded how quickly an enjoyable outing in the sun on the water can turn tragic. On Storm Lake in northwest Iowa, a 10-year-old Nebraska boy was killed after the speedboat he was in struck a dredge pipe in the water, causing the outboard motor to flip backwards into the boat and on top of the boy. On the Coralville Reservoir, a 12-year-old Fairfield girl died after she fell off an inner tube and was hit by another boat. On the Missouri River, a 26-year-old man fell overboard while boating near Port Neal. A body has been found, but to our information, investigators haven't yet confirmed the identity. On Lake Delhi in Delaware County, a Waverly man was charged with boating while intoxicated after he collided with a hoist. And on the Mississippi near Muscatine, a family of four was forced to jump overboard to avoid being hit by a barge. All of these incidents and others were reported on those 3 days on Memorial Day weekend this weekend past. These accidents have prompted us to ask, what can be done to increase safety on Iowa's waterways? And ask also, does Iowa need stricter boating regulations? Joining us to discuss boating safety this hour, Susan Stocker, boating safety coordinator for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. She joins us by phone. Susan, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Also with us, John Kaftel, a representative from the Army Corps of Engineers. He's based at the Coralville Reservoir. Good afternoon to you, John.
Good afternoon.
Also joining us by phone, Steve Grable, a DNR officer for Woodbury County in western Iowa. He oversees part of the Missouri River. Steve, welcome to our program. Steve, we'll hope to get Steve there in a minute. Steve, are you there? We hope to get in touch with Steve in a few minutes. Let's start off with Susan Stocker. I listed a number of the accidents, not all of them, that happened a couple of weeks ago during that three-day weekend. How typical is that weekend in terms of the number and nature of boating accidents that occurred?
Memorial weekend is considered the start of the boating season. It is typical to have a few incidents because everybody is just getting out and wanting to enjoy the nice weather. It was a little bit disturbing to have that many incidents.
Mm-hmm. So you would say it was atypical.
That's correct.
Can you provide some statistics, round numbers, on the number and nature of boating accidents in Iowa in a typical year?
Approximately every year, Iowa has around 41 boating accidents annually, and that would include property damage, personal injury, and or if we have fatalities.
Mm-hmm. How many fatalities in a typical year?
Iowa is actually ranked very, very low. On an average, we don't have more than two boating fatalities in a year, and several years we have had, none. So over a 10-year period, we average about having two.
So on this Memorial Day weekend, we have, by my count, at least three, though, right?
That is correct. So that is higher than anybody likes to see.
Right. We'd also like to reach out to our listeners during this hour. If you've been involved in a boating accident or had a near miss, we'd like to hear your story. Also, your thoughts on what you think can be done to increase boating safety on Iowa's waterways. 1-866-780-9100 or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. I want to turn to John Kaftel, a representative from the Army Corps of Engineers based at the Coralville Reservoir. John, can you give us some more details to help us understand what led to the death of the 12-year-old girl at the Coralville Reservoir on Memorial Day weekend?
From what I can gather from reports and talking to people, it sounds like it was just a series of events that came together at the wrong place, the wrong time. Any one of them by itself wasn't as big an issue, okay, but all together at the point they occurred, I don't think anybody's going to be able to point to one single thing as responsible for this accident.
Mm-hmm. Where is the – do you know where the investigation is, where this case is right now?
The last I knew, the DNR was still trying to determine what, if any, charges would be filed.
Susan Stocker, what do you have to comment about this specific case?
That is correct what John has mentioned, that we're still investigating and figuring out the charges, if any, to charge. I would like to say that certainly since there are no brakes on boats or there are no road markings, people certainly need to know about the speed and distance laws and the rules of the road while on the water.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've read that Johnson County Sheriff and Lake McBride, the Coralville Reservoir is in Johnson County. The Sheriff, Lonnie Pokrovic, said his department is exploring the idea of working with the Iowa DNR to make sure there are enough marked vehicles and uniformed officers at the reservoir. Have you had contact with the sheriffs or other law enforcement to see if you can make a difference without changing any regulations or laws?
That is certainly what we currently already do. The department, the DNR, has a great relationship with the sheriff's departments and local entities. And so, yes, we will continue to do that across the state.
I want to turn to Steve Grable, if he's on the line now. Steve, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Hi, Steve. Welcome to our program. Steve is a DNR officer for Woodbury County. That's way over in the western border of the state. For Woodbury County, you oversee part of the Missouri River, and you can tell us more about the case of Dustin Pierce. What happened on Memorial Day weekend on the Missouri?
Well, we're still working on the case, Ben, all the details and ironing all that out. But basically, Dustin allegedly fell out of the boat, and we have recovered a body, like you said earlier. We're still in the process of identifying that, but it was just another tragic incident of what can happen if you aren't careful in the water.
Any indications that you can talk about now that led to him falling out of the boat?
Like I said, we're still working on that. Hopefully, we'll get it all ironed out as quickly as we can.
Susan, tell me about the contributing factors. I know that the Coast Guard and also individual states look at these statistics. The primary contributing factors that lead to boating accidents in recreational boating are what?
They are definitely our speed and distance violations. Again, like I said, since there are no brakes and there are no highway markings out there, it's very important that people know the laws and staying the furthest distance away from another boat to avoid collisions.
Mm-hmm. Speed and distance, so is that enforced in any way?
Oh, sure. Our conservation officers enforce speed and distance all the time.
Mm-hmm. Now, careless and reckless operations, so for instance, if one of your officers see something happening, what action? Give me an example. What action would be taken?
Well, if an officer is patrolling the waterways and sees a careless or reckless, let's say if someone is potentially riding on the bow of the boat, they would stop the individual and based on the seriousness, whether choose to just verbally educate or issue a citation.
Okay. John Castle, you're at the Coralville Reservoir, and I actually crossed the Mahaffey Bridge quite a bit. That is separate Lake McBride from the reservoir? Or is in that
it's
general
on the way,
vicinity? But anyway, from Mahaffey Bridge, you can look down on the Coralville Reservoir, and when I heard about this tragic death, I was frankly not surprised. On a nice weekend, especially, you can look into the reservoir, as you can with other reservoirs in the state, and see high-powered boats racing back and forth. You sometimes think this is the Indy 500 on water.
That's particularly noteworthy at Coralville, it's more of a long, wide river than, say, Sailorville or Red Rock. They're more of a single body, large body of water. You can see one side to the other. There's a lot of congestion on Coralville. Boaters have to pay very close attention as to what all those individuals around them are doing.
So specifically when we have a reservoir, several in the state, when you observe what's going on, what are the contributing factors that you observe firsthand as to leading to near misses or accidents?
Again, I think part of it is people just not paying attention to their surroundings, what other boats around them are doing. Boats are supposed to have a spotter if they have a skier or tube or someone behind them. So many times if you're out there patrolling, you look and the operator of the boat is looking back over his shoulder to see what's going on. He's supposed to be operating the boat and looking ahead what's going on. The spotter is supposed to inform him if there's a problem behind. That's not done a lot. You have different sized vessels, different speeds. You have jet skis, large, small boats, occasionally a canoe that doesn't know what they're getting into on a weekend afternoon. You mix all those together, and the potential for problems is really pretty great.
Do you feel that our laws are sufficient? Let me put this out to Susan Stocker at first. Our current laws are sufficient to give us the highest level of safety while enjoying our recreational boating?
I think our current laws are sufficient. What I think we need to do is we need to require boater education for everyone in the state who's going to operate a boat.
So raising awareness on which points specifically, these speed, distance items you mentioned?
Yes, raising awareness on the speed and distance, raising awareness. You didn't mention, Ben, but we also had an explosion where a person did not properly vent the fuel fumes out of the personal watercraft before started. So all of those things are covered in an education safety course, and so people, you know, could learn and be safer.
Uh-huh. Now, that explosion, did that result in any injuries?
It did result in injuries, but everyone is fine and well.
Okay. Well, we're talking about boat safety this hour on The Exchange, and when we come back, I want to ask about the role of alcohol on our waterways. If you're a pilot of a boat, is it different than driving a car, for instance? How much can you drink and still pilot a boat? What is allowed by law? We want to reach out to you, Exchange listeners, to see if you've been involved in a boating accident you'd like to tell us about, or have you had a near miss on one of Iowa's many waterways? What do you think can be done to increase boating safety? 1-866-780-9100, our toll-free number, 1-866-780-9100, or you can email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Boating safety, as we begin our summer boating season. We'll be back in just a moment. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. Have you been involved in a boating accident? Have you had a near miss that you'd like to tell us about? We're discussing boating safety this hour, 1-866-780-9100, or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Several guests with us this hour, Susan Stocker and Stephen Grable of the DNR with us, and John Castle of the Army Corps of Engineers based at the Coralville Reservoir. Several really tragic accidents happening over the Memorial Day weekend, which we have to think about was a magnificent weekend weather-wise, which John Castle probably contributed to this, right? If we had had a rainy, cold weekend, not as many boaters out.
I don't think there's any question. This year's Memorial Day was probably nicer than any weekend we had all last summer. And being the first real holiday weekend of the summer, I'm sure there were a lot more boaters and people on the water than normal.
Jim is with us on the road, hopefully driving safely while talking on the phone. Jim, hi. Jim, are you there?
Hello?
Yes, Jim, we can hear you. Welcome to the Exchange.
Good. Thank you for your program and taking my call, and hi to your guests. They may have a different opinion, but they've probably got better knowledge. I live on a small lake in central Iowa, and we compare it to friends who live on a big lake. And We do have buoys that keep people right and left, but I'm not talking about boating accidents. I want to go to a minute what we call jet skis, the small craft that two or three can ride on. And there was a terrible problem on our small lake with that, and I wanted to give you the answer that our own board came up with that I think may help other lakes. And that was if mom and dad owned the property and they had a son at college and he'd bring a friend home, the friend would get on that jet ski, maybe capable, maybe not. But say an incident happened, that person then was ticketed. And sometimes the college kids have more abundance of money than the parents, and so the college kid just paid the fee and there wasn't any big deal. The problem persists. Mm. What we did then last, our board said, okay, the person that did the incident doesn't get the ticket. Old dad does, the guy that owns the property. And believe you me, when dad got a ticket for not even being on the property, there were some changes made. So we've had a huge, huge increase in safety now on our jet skis because they just crowd our little lake.
That's so Jim. Thank you, Jim, for that little story from about your private lake in central Iowa. So when we talk about public lakes, Susan Stocker, how much of that can be applied to what mechanisms do we have to enforce on our public lakes, our public lands?
Basically, the mechanism we would have to do is if we wanted to implement that across the state, we would have to go to the legislators and have it addressed in code. I think, and there are laws on the books that talk about where an owner or operator is responsible for the effects of loaning a boat. And again, so I think, you know, as a caller, they were able to educate people. And whether it's, you know, giving the citation to the landowner or, you know, the person riding the jet ski. So I think education and, is the way to go.
Of course, when we drive on our highways and roads, we need a driver's license. What do we need if we're going to be in a powerboat on a river or a lake, Susan?
You are not required to have a driver's license in order to operate a boat. You are required to register the boat. The only thing you are required to do for a boater education certificate are those individuals 12 to 17. So if they want to operate the personal watercrafts or a boat out on the waterways, they need to take an education course.
What can you say, Susan, about how often alcohol is a contributing factor to an accident?
In Iowa, last year in 2009, 19% of all of our accidents involved alcohol, and 15% involved alcohol. And usually what happens amongst our fatalities, quite a few of them involve alcohol, unfortunately.
Mm. So how do our laws about drinking and boating compare with our laws in the state about drinking and driving?
Currently, our blood alcohol level for operating a boat while intoxicated is 0.10. And as we all know, driving, operating a vehicle is 0.08. So that is certainly a concern and something we would like to see where they both mirror each other.
Mm-hmm. What is the justification for having them different, a higher blood alcohol level permitted piloting a boat than piloting a car?
What had happened, if people remember, several years ago, in order to operate a vehicle, it was 0.10. And so at that time, both of the BAC levels mirrored. But since then, the Federal Highway Department was able to hold back highway funds from states in order for them to lower the blood alcohol level to 0.08 while operating a car. Iowa does not have any of those funds to withhold, and so we are working diligently and partnering with legislators in order to change them and make them mirrored.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. We'll hear from a legislator, State Senator David Johnson, when we come back in the second half of our show. Let's go to Paul in the Quad Cities. Good afternoon, Paul.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine. What would you like to throw into our conversation?
Well, I think the lady just covered it pretty well, because what I was going to say is I think just to change the mindset, we need to sync up the alcohol laws for driving and for boating, And I do think it's legal to, well, you can't be intoxicated. I think it's legal to drink while you're driving a boat as long as you don't exceed the blood alcohol level. But I think just to change the mindset, we need to probably change that as well and get people to get into a more safe operating mode just because you're driving a vehicle that you don't have lanes and you don't have brakes.
Mm-hmm. And of course, while driving a car, you can't have an open bottle of alcohol. That would be a big difference there too. Steve Grable, out in the western part of the state, a DNR officer for Woodbury County on the Missouri River. How much of a problem is alcohol for you when you patrol the Missouri there?
I'd say it's a significant problem. You know, even though 0.10 is the limit, you know, we start to see signs of impairment down around 0.04. And people need to realize that, you know, when you're on the water, the wind and the waves and the sun actually enhance the effects of the alcohol. Mm-hmm. You know, you get dehydrated, you don't realize that the alcohol is affecting you faster. And, you know, we've talked about the cars. You know, we spend 12 months out of the year driving in a car. We don't get to spend as much time operating boats. So, you know, that combination and alcohol abuse can have lethal consequences.
Paul in the Quad Cities brought up a good point. He seems to have dropped the line there. But the point about the awareness is not there that we have for driving our highways. We know in recent generations, alcohol consumption and driving, that awareness has been raised significantly from 10, 20, 30 years ago. Not so in boating, or do you see something happening there too, Steve?
Oh, I think there's definitely a lot more awareness. You know, in the last few years here in Woodbury County, we've had a lot more boaters say that they're taking the precautions, you know, having a designated driver, drinking responsibly. And I definitely think the enforcement efforts and the efforts of our education program have had an impact here.
Mm-hmm. Susan Stocker, what can we do to raise the awareness? You would say you were talking about the required instruction. So part of that required instruction would be information about alcohol?
Yes, it would, and the boating education course covers all of that information, the effects of alcohol, the required safety equipment. So besides the education, I would certainly, you know, see and have us mirror the blood alcohol level of vehicles.
Mm-hmm. What would that required education look like before, while you're getting your boating license, everybody to use that boat would be required to take that class?
What it would be, it would be the operator of the boat would be required to take a boating safety class. And because, you know, ultimately the operator is responsible for the passengers and informing them of the safety equipment and where the life jackets are located. So it would be someone who wanted to operate a boat.
Mm-hmm. And how much do you think that could increase safety?
I think that could increase safety huge because it is not a matter of, you know, someone who's been boating all of their life. It's a matter of what they can do when a situation comes up and the other person is not aware of some of the rules or has forgotten some of the rules.
Okay, we have to take a short break. We'll be back with Susan Stocker and Steve Grable of the DNR, John Castle of the Army Corps of Engineers, talking about boating safety this hour. Have you been in a boating accident? Have you had a near miss? We'd like to hear your story and what you think can be done to increase boating safety for recreational boats in our state. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. When we come back, State Senator David Johnson will join us. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with The Exchange. I'm Ben Kiefer talking about boating safety this hour. Even though the summer boating season is very young, there have already been several tragic accidents on Iowa's waterways and several fatalities. So we're talking about ways in which perhaps boating safety in the state can be increased. My guests, Susan Stocker of the DNR, Boating Safety Coordinator. Steve Grable was with us of the DNR before he had to leave. John Castle is with us of the Army Corps of Engineers. He's based at the Coralville Reservoir. And joining us now is David Johnson, State Senator David Johnson, a Republican from Ochaden in northwest Iowa, near Lake Okoboji, I believe. And David Johnson, welcome to our program.
Well, thank you for the invitation to join you today.
Now, I understand you have long sought to make the standards for identical for drunken driving and drunken boating.
Well, yes, that's true. I have been able in the Senate in my 8 years there to have three separate votes on this issue, and the combined vote in the Senate on a bipartisan basis was 149-1 to try to mirror our intoxicated levels for driving and boating together at 0.08 since the state moved to that. And, you know, it's just something that's been stalled by certain representatives in the House. And, you know, it's a very simple issue.
So having sailed through the Senate, I believe in a couple of occasions, in 2009 and 2007, it dies in the House. What are the forces in the House at work that kill this?
Well, I'm not really sure about that, but let me get back to where this all comes from. I mean, I do represent the Iowa Great Lakes. Let's do a little background here. The Iowa Great Lakes really is the state's vacation land. And we have a number, and that's been recognized by people coming in from other states. When you realize that 1 million people come to the Iowa Great Lakes between Memorial Day and Labor Day, well, a lot of those people are bringing boats with them, and that raises a lot of issues about that. If you go up there between West Lake Okoboji and East Lake Okoboji and see the boats moving back and forth through there, the hundreds of boats every day, that there are safety issues up there. And so with the help of the Great Lakes Water Safety Council, I have to tell you, they're my lobby. I mean, they are just citizens who care about safety, water safety in particular, around the Iowa Great Lakes. And when I was elected to the Senate, they came to me and asked me to address this issue. And it's very simple. Here's the simple thing. You can leave the lake. And one of your previous callers made it very clear, and that's true. I mean, if you want to have a beer while you're out boating on the Iowa Great Lakes or any other of the lakes that we have in Iowa, and you leave the lake and you're perhaps at a legal limit for boating at 0.10, but then you take your boat out, put it on the trailer, and take off, actually you're legally drunk. And that's what concerns me. I mean, it should be something that mirrors that. I mean, we have 40 states right now, and 40 of the 50 states in the United States have a voting alcohol level of 0.08. And, in fact, Minnesota and Nebraska and Illinois and Wisconsin have that as well.
Okay, let me go back to the legislature and ask, you know, when you – This all is making sense to me, and I suppose to many of our listeners. But so tell me, what arguments do you hear against this more stringent standard equaling the drinking and driving standard that we have?
Well, the fact of the matter, Ben, is I've never really gotten a real answer to that. I'm not really sure, but I know that it's been blocked in the House. There really hasn't been a fair hearing about this issue. It's a very simple thing. I come from this wonderful natural resource area in northwest Iowa, and where it is an issue. And if you go back to, and Susan will back this up, Susan Stockwell will back this up, is that West Lake Okoboji, a very popular place, a very wonderful resource for our state, is a location of an exceedingly high number over the years of accidents. And many of those do involve alcohol. And I don't know what the issue is. I've never gotten a clear explanation from that, either from the House Majority Leader, who is an attorney, or a couple of other attorneys who are a member of his caucus, and they just don't consider this issue really important. I just want to emphasize, in the Senate, it's a nonpartisan issue. It's a bipartisan effort to try to mirror the two together, because in the long run, if we're going to try to keep or bring young people to Iowa, they're going to be looking for attractions. Would you agree with that?
Right.
They want those outdoor opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to create them in the Department of Natural Resources, even on a time of tough budget situations, is trying to do the best that they can, but that's what we want to do. We want to provide them opportunities. If we're going to do that, then we're going to see more use of our lakes and our waterways.
Susan Stalker, do you want to venture into those political, perhaps dangerous waters with a comment about the alcohol legislation as it stands right now, why that's not getting passed?
I would certainly like to thank Senator Johnson and be able to work with him. I think that it's just a matter of being able to see and show people that 0.08 on the water, 0.10 on the water and 0.08 on the land doesn't mix. And so, as Senator Johnson said, someone could be stopped for drinking on a boat and register 0.09. On a boat, and as soon as they take their vehicle, load up their boat and their trailer, now they've got a 40-foot long vehicle, and they're legally intoxicated. So working with them and the legislators this year, I'm very, very hopeful.
We have a number of callers to get to in our boating safety discussion. 1-866-780-9100. Bill has been waiting on the line from Sac City. Bill, good afternoon. Welcome to our program.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. several points I'd like to make is the landscape on the water is much less predictable than it is generally on our highways. And then combine that with the fact that we drive a boat very little in comparison to what we do a car. So at the very least, blood alcohol levels should be the same and perhaps even less than it is on our roads. And I've been fishing in Canadian provinces of Ontario and Saskatchewan. Virtually no alcohol is allowed in the boat, and that includes even empty cans. Lastly, I do some sailing, and people that operate power boats oftentimes don't even know the sail has right of way and certainly don't respect distances that they are away to be away from a sailboat. So, combine all those things, I think we just need to have our waters much, much safer.
Mm-hmm. And it speaks for the increasing the awareness that Susan Stalker was talking about. Bill, thank you for your call from Sac City. Going to Ottumwa now. Paul, hi.
Hi. I heard Sue mention a couple of things. One is, you know, the idea of a safety class certificate. And the other is... Only 15% of water incidents seem to be related to alcohol, which tells me, you know, based upon my own personal observation, I used to drive across the dam or the mile-long bridge at Sailorville, and I just saw a lot of recklessness and a lot of people who just don't know what they're doing out there. It seems to me that a license can be revoked. Having passed the safety class, that's not really revocable. I don't understand why we can't license motorized watercraft operation.
I wonder if Susan Stalker would like to tackle that. Susan?
Well, I would like to tackle that, and I agree with the caller that licensing, having a license to operate a boat would be a really good idea. The U.S. Coast Guard is certainly looking at that in the near future. What it would need to be is to get it passed through legislation in order to require a license to operate a boat.
Okay. Paul, thank you very much for your call from Ottumwa. Let's go to Bob. Bob is in Fairfield. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I have two questions. One is, I understand that in the case of the girl who was killed on the Coralville Lake, that the driver of the boat refused the breathalyzer test. Is that true? And my second question is, if anyone does refuse a breathalyzer test in an accident, what are the consequences?
Okay, Bob, thank you. Calling from Fairfield, the 12-year-old girl who died after she fell off an inner tube in the Coralville Reservoir was from Fairfield, hit by another boat after she fell off this inner tube. I want to go to John Castle. I don't know how much you can talk about in this case in answering the questions that Bob in Fairfield has, but if not, talk more about enforcement when you see something happening that is potentially dangerous.
I can't really speak to the specifics about the case, but it's my understanding that if you refuse to take a test, you can lose your driver's license for a year. I believe recently the state passed that. as far as enforcement of different things on Coralville, as I mentioned, it's 17 miles long from the dam to the Interstate 380 bridge. It's a very long, narrow lake. We used to kind of say it was like a snake swallowing a mouse, that congestion would move up and down the lake from one place to another. Under the bridge, of course, is always congested, but the reckless driving issues, some people are out there reckless. Others are, I think, because in a car, if you get in a situation you're unsure of, most people, their initial reaction is to let up on the gas. You can't do that in a boat automatically. You have to consciously reduce the speed of the boat. And that seems to be about the last thing some people really think of. Others, it seems like they actually give it gas to get through a situation faster. So I don't know how you would actually change that, but just I think that the mechanics of a boat are different than a car.
John Castle, you were on the Coralville Reservoir patrolling, right, regularly?
Not so much anymore.
Not
I
so
used
much
to.
Anymore. Well, whether it's you or let me go to Susan then with this question. When can a person from the DNR, when does the person from the DNR patrolling or perhaps observing something from shore have the authority to pull a boater off a lake or a river?
What we do is in besides our full-time officers, we also have seasonal water patrol officers, approximately 40 of them across the state. So that enhances our visibility out on the water. If a person, an enforcement person, sees a violation or something that isn't safe, they have the authority to stop that vessel and in order to correct the incident and or do a safety check to make sure that the boaters have the proper safety equipment.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Dean in Dubuque. Dean, hi. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I was sailing with my daughter in a small sailboat at Reed's Landing, a narrow spot in the Mississippi River that connects Minnesota and Wisconsin up north. And two very large cruisers came roaring down the river, did not see us. In fact, they were on the bridge yelling at each other, holding drinks in their hands. And I thought for a minute we were going to get run over. The last minute they saw us and swerved away from us.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is, Bill in Sac City brought up the fact that sailboats have the right-of-way. Another thing is we do a lot of canoeing in the Mississippi River, and again, people just don't recognize the fact that canoes also have the right-of-way. And then there's the issue of night boating that can cause a lot of problems. The Mississippi has wing dams, which I've seen people run up against and get thrown forward into their windshields. So there's so many issues on a big river like that that people just don't realize. So many people go out in boats, they buy a new boat, have no idea where wing dams is, no idea how to boat. And I just think there should be classes on boating, and there should be a law for that equalizes the drunken driving with boating. I mean, that I can't believe Iowa's hanging back on that. Hopefully, they'll get that done.
Dean,
thank you.
Thank you for sharing your experience. Of course, that experience also reminding us of the one that took place on Memorial Day weekend. We heard in the news on the Mississippi River near Muscatine, a family of four was forced to jump overboard. I think this is from a houseboat on the Mississippi to avoid being hit by a barge. Do you know anything more about that, Susan?
I do, Ben. And what it is of course, on the Mississippi River, commercial traffic has the right-of-way because if the barge is approximately, 3 miles long, they're not able to stop because, of course, without the brakes. And so, yes, my understanding is that the family had mechanical problems and they couldn't get the boat started. And so all of the four were wearing life jackets, jumped overboard, and were rescued by another boater.
John Castle of the Army Corps of Engineers, during the break, you were mentioning to me one way that we would increase boating safety. We look at some of the statistics that I'll just read this from the Coast Guard. Over two-thirds of all fatal boating accident victims drowned, and of those, 90% were not wearing a life jacket. Does that match statistics that you see here in Iowa?
I don't have that necessarily for the state of Iowa, but overall on lakes under the Corps' jurisdiction, we have 93%, which correlates very well. I know it's not a popular issue with a lot of people, the infringing on personal rights and all, but I don't think there's any question that PFDs do save lives.
Mm-hmm. And right now, what is the regulation that a personal flotation device has to be on the boat but not necessarily being worn except for youngsters, right?
Correct.
How young do you have to be to still have to wear one?
Susan can answer that one better than me.
It is any youth 12 and under who is in a boat that's underway has to wear a life jacket.
And otherwise, if you're above 12, your preserver can be anywhere on the boat.
It can be readily accessible, and that brings up a good point, Ben. Having your life jackets in the nice plastic package that they came in is not readily accessible because in an accident or thrown out, you're not going to get them.
Right, right. Accidents, yeah. You never think they're going to happen to you, and they do tend to happen very quickly. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Karen is joining us from the northeast part of the state up near beautiful McGregor or in McGregor. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I was wondering and also had a suggestion if this isn't in law or whatever. When someone falls off of a tube or skis or a wakeboard or whatever, if there is some way that you alert other boats in the area that someone is in the water. We always kind of felt if there was a flare to shoot up or a certain color flag to raise rather than standing up in the boat and waving.
Now, what would that be, Susan? Is there any practice there that would make a downed skier safer?
Ben, currently there are 14 states that have a mandatory skier down flag, and that's usually a 12-inch by 12-inch bright orange flag. Along with that, and currently Iowa does not require that in our regulations, we do strongly suggest it because we believe that there is merit. And part of that is to make sure that the boats are staying far enough away. But as the caller said, you know, if you have someone in the water and you have a 75-foot ski rope between the boat and the tuber, it does make it a little bit more difficult to see the people in the water.
Just a couple more minutes talking about boating safety. I want to go back to our state senator guest, David Johnson, from the northwest part of the state, from the area of Iowa's Great Lakes. David Johnson, will you reintroduce some kind of legislation to improve boating safety?
Oh, absolutely. I'll just keep up doing that, and I have the full support of the Senate, I believe. That's what the previous solicitor told me. So I'm going to reintroduce the legislation every General Assembly. We're going to have a new General Assembly, and in order to keep this issue alive, it's got to come from somewhere, and I think it's going to come from the Iowa Great Lakes, both in the House and the Senate. And I want to, if I could, just mention a couple of things. I know it was talked about that in 2009, the number of reportable accidents, the 50% involved alcohol, but you only have to go back to 2007 where 34% were. And in fact, half of the fatalities involved alcohol. So it changes from year to year. And I think the question about the weather, you know, if we get fine conditions, we got a lot more boats out there. That's really good. And I want to just mention, too, that I've been out, you know, personally with the Lakes Patrol on the Iowa Great Lakes. I tell you that these people are well-trained. They are highly respected by the boaters on the lakes, and they know what they're doing. And we have to keep that presence up. And it really is about voluntary compliance. I mean, this is not about changing the legal limit. It's not about going out and starting to headhunt here. I don't believe that at all. And we're just trying to educate people that there are hazards out there on our waterways, and we want them to be safe. And we want people to have a great time when the weather's fine on our lakes and waterways.
State Senator David Johnson, we have just about a minute left, but I want to ask you, when you reintroduce legislation, you say you'll keep on it. Will there be any sorts of additions or changes from the first and the other versions that you've introduced?
Well, I haven't really received any word from the House as to what they're objections are over there. I would suggest that people who want to mirror the two laws on intoxication, that they contact whoever's the leadership is. We have an election coming up. We'll see what happens there, but I'm sure that we're going to get the Senate to go along together again.
Mm-hmm.
And hope that we can get the House. And so just know what those contacts are. But
very, very quickly, David, with this change, will that impact in any way? You mentioned, of course, Iowa's Great Lakes as a great place for out-of-state tourists. Will it impact the flow of tourists to the Iowa Great Lakes at all?
Well, what we want to have is a safe environment for everybody, no matter whether it's the Iowa Great Lakes or any of the other lakes that we have around the state. And whether it's the Missouri River to the Mississippi River, we want boater safety to be out there. I have introduced legislation and had the backing on the making sure that we got life jackets out there, at least for children.
Okay, very good. We have to leave it right there. Thank you very much, State Senator David Johnson. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Thank you also, Susan Stocker of the DNR and John Castle of the Army Corps of Engineers. It's been a great to have you with us to talk about boating safety and how to increase it in the state of Iowa. John, Susan, thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
The Exchange is produced by Lindsay Moon, Catherine Perkins, Jeff Schmidt, and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance from Rosalind Sixby today. Technical support from Julie Englander. We always welcome your comments and questions. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.